You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Georgia inmate Troy Davis died last night by lethal injection after drawing attention from the world over to not just this case, but the idea of capital punishment in the United States. Davis was convicted of the 1989 murder of a police officer. But since then, most of the witnesses in his case have recanted their testimonies. And on three instances, his scheduled executions were postponed, once in 2007 by the same Georgia State Parole Board that denied his request for clemency, although it had three different members at the time. In 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court, with just 90 minutes to go, and again in 2008 by 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Last night, the U.S. Supreme Court intervened again, but that was just a delay of 4 hours before he died at 11:08. Joining us this morning, Jeffrey Rosen, law professor at George Washington University and legal affairs editor of The New Republic. Good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning.
You know, there have been a number of capital cases that have drawn a lot of attention, perhaps not as much as this. I couldn't believe 630,000 petitions for clemency in Troy Davis's case. But each time there's media attention to an execution that people feel the sentencing may have been incorrect or mistaken, there's a discussion about whether or about the death penalty and whether or not it can ever be absolutely infallible. Why would this case actually make that discussion more likely?
This is the highest profile case recently in which someone is put to death, strenuously maintaining his innocence, and convicted only on the basis of eyewitness testimony, much of which has been recanted. This is the most troubling category of case. There are a recent study of the 250 people who have been definitively exonerated by DNA evidence by Brandon Garrett at the University of Virginia, found in 76% of those cases, eyewitnesses wrongly identified the accused person. And that's why a case like this, where there's no physical evidence tying the defendant to the scene of the crime, where seven out of the nine eyewitnesses have recanted their testimony, where one of the remaining eyewitnesses is himself a suspect, is one where it's very difficult to have confidence beyond reasonable doubt in the integrity of the verdict. And what's so heartbreaking to many people is that the Supreme Court rules make it very difficult to present evidence of actual innocence. They focus more on procedural irregularities at the trial. So when you have a flawed lineup from the outset, it's very, very difficult to correct that. And then the peculiarity of the Georgia clemency system, which ultimately is unappealable at the final stage, and apparently the clemency board was divided by a 3-2 vote about whether or not to grant clemency in the last instance, makes it very, very difficult to be confident that an innocent man wasn't executed. The final thing is that it's a fallacy to think that most death penalty defendants maintain their innocence. Actually, very few do. And the fact that Troy Davis went to his grave defiantly maintaining that Georgia had executed an innocent man really only adds to the uncertainty surrounding this remarkable case.
Professor Jeffrey Rosen at George Washington University, is there a set of competing doctrines here in death penalty cases? The doctrine which says that there's a certain sanctity to the finding of fact of the jury, and that when the trial is ended, that ends that sort of consideration of exculpatory evidence. And another doctrine which essentially allows court to be in session on an open-ended basis to re-examine evidence for technological reasons as well as this sort of recantation?
Very much so. There's absolutely that tension. And most of the doctrine favors the finality of the fact-finding verdict, which is why if there are flaws in the fact-finding at the beginning, they're so hard to correct. It's surprising to people to know that the Supreme Court hasn't even clearly recognized a constitutional right to present evidence of actual innocence, although in 2009 the court did send this case back to the Georgia court to see if there was newly discovered evidence that established clear innocence that couldn't have been presented at the original trial. But it's just a peculiarity, and it's counterintuitive to people that the Supreme Court review is focused more on constitutional errors. Was there racial bias, as we talked about last week? When there is evidence of racial bias, that might cause the court to reexamine the verdict. But serious doubts about the original lineup or the confessions or the intimidation of witnesses, all that's left up to the trial court. and the Supreme Court isn't even allowed under the law to second-guess that, even if it wants to.
Jeffrey Rosen is law professor at George Washington University and legal affairs editor of The New Republic. Thanks, as always, Jeffrey.
Thanks. It's good to talk.
And we want to get your views on this. Do you think your mind has been changed about the death penalty by what's happened with Troy Davis? Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can post your comments to thetakeaway.org. Interestingly, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was asked about it last week in San Francisco, what she would want to do during the last years remaining on the bench. She said, "I'd probably go back to the day when the Supreme Court said the death penalty could not be administered with an even hand."
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.